From Johannesburg to Jerusalem, the world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 High FM.
You're listening to 101.9 High FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the New Blue Review. Hope that you are doing fantastically well out there and are looking forward to another week and another Monday to get some good things done in our country and our city and in the sound of this particular voice that you are hearing here on 101.9 High FM. And of course, to do that, you're going to need good information, good insights, and good understandings of what's going on. And that is what we're all about on this show, The New Blue Review, your favorite current and culture, current affairs and culture show. So what is it that we have on the lineup for you today? Well, we're going to be talking about MTN and the mounting legal challenges that seem to be facing the company and what it means for South Africa's relationship with Iran. We're going to be crossing over to Zambia and finding out why it is that Israel is putting an embassy there and finding out what that means for relations in general. Then we're also going to be talking about new polling numbers coming out regarding the local government elections. We have a local government election sort of starting to come up on the horizon, and we're starting to get the first sets of polling numbers to see what that means. So that's going to be something else. And then we're going to find out about a new Israeli comedy about, of all things, a kidnapping. So yeah, only the Israelis could make a show about a kidnapping at this current moment. So yeah, that is what is on the show for today, and yeah, it's going to be, I hope, super cool. So let's see where it goes, because it should be a lot of fun. Let's start off with this story about Iran and MTN, and let's figure out what it is and where are all these legal challenges coming from and what does it actually mean for things going forward with relations with Iran. So let's take a few steps back and start off with legal challenges against MTN. What is actually happening? So there are now three separate legal processes that are currently running against Iran. The first one, and perhaps the sort of most oldest one, is not being brought from any Western country or anything like that. It's being bought by a group called Turkcell. And Turkcell is a Turkish cellular phone company. And what Turkcell alleges is that they were pushed out of a contract that they had with Iran to supply cellular products and services in Iran, and they were supposed to get a deal with the Iranians when all of a sudden MTN came along and took it away from them. MTN alleges that Iran, or rather Turkcell, didn't actually have the requisite requirements to actually run this thing for Iran, that the rules in Iran had actually changed, and that they were no longer a bidder. Turkcell alleges that the MTN actually had to bribe their way into Iran, and that part of the bribery was not only in monetary terms, but that it also had to do with diplomatic favors, that MTN would use its ability to get, as a large telco in South Africa, to get to major parts of the diplomatic corps and the presidency and whatever to actually drive foreign policy issues. And that, in fact, is exactly what happened. After MTN did, in fact, get the deal with Iran-Cell, the South African government actually defended Iran at the IAEA, which is the Atomic Energy Agency, and defended their nuclear program, their nuclear power program which a lot of people assumed was a nuclear weapons program. Now, of course, one could say that South Africa might have done that anyway. After all, South Africa does have this relationship with Iran. But the suspicion is that if there was something dodgy that went in with MTN, then they would have that it would have been part of it. Now, it's important to say that MTN actually took this allegation at least fairly seriously. It's they thought it was serious enough to actually react to it, and they what they did was is they actually issued their own internal commission to look into this, which with a sort of famous I think English barrister. There was some suggestion that his daughter was intimately involved, which was a question about its appropriateness or arm's length engagement. But whistleblowers have suggested that, in fact, this wasn't the case, that there was an issue anyway. Their internal commission said that nothing happened, and they have tried to rely on this to say that there's no problem. And in any case, for the last sort of 10 years or a bit more than 10 years, Turkcell has been bouncing around the country, or the world really, trying to find a place to see if it can sue Iran, especially since other people, like in the States, for example, have actually been convicted of the same bribery charges. They believe that they have a story to tell here. And yeah, and so that is what they have been doing. They went to America to try and find legal relief. The Americans said, well, you don't really have jurisdiction here. Then the suggestion was they would do the trial in Iran's courts, but Turkcell said that Iran didn't actually have a proper independent judiciary that could hear it. So eventually it ended up coming to South Africa. In South Africa, the High Court said that it didn't think that there was a jurisdictional question. Then it went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said it did have a jurisdictional ability to do it. So now it's ended up in the Constitutional Court. And we will see in the next weeks and months what the Constitutional Court says. If they say that somehow this thing can go ahead, I think that it will open a massive can of worms where all this information, which sort of has come out via whistleblowers, will actually be able to be showed in the light of day. And we'll be able to understand exactly what happened between MTN and Iransil. So this is the first one. This is only the first legal issue that MTN is having. I'm going to cover the rest coming up. So do stay tuned. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. Welcome back to the show. We're talking today about the legal woes that are affecting MTN and what it tells us about South Africa's relationship with Iran. We just covered the first big and oldest case that is going ahead, and we will find out in the next few weeks or months if the Constitutional Court allows this case to go ahead. We will hear something about it, and it will be a very interesting to go forward. But it's not the only case that MTN is having to deal with. There is another case, and this time it has been being put forward by an American group, a group of servicemen, American soldiers who were killed while serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the claim by this group and their lawyers is that basically, MTN was used as a vehicle by the IRGC, which is the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, which is the elite kind of set of soldiers in the Iranian setup who are there to defend the revolution, whatever that means. But they're basically the most dangerous group of people in Iran in most many respects. And the allegation is that by MTN rather being in Iran, Iran, which was under sanctions, could now suddenly get hold of communications equipment, weapons equipment, all sorts of other things that were important in order to actually do what was required to fund their military adventures. And those adventures happened to be in Iraq and Afghanistan. And in the process, American soldiers had gotten killed, and now their families, a number of them, are actually bringing what was normally be considered a class action suit, but actually for some reason they've actually decided to do it individually here. And they're suing MTN, which is for money that they are owed. And so this is going on at the moment. And initially, MTN had asked the American courts to dismiss this, but that had not been taken up. And now they are wanting to go to what's known as discovery phase, which I believe is sort of coming up next. And in that phase, the lawyers will start to be able to ask for documents from MTN for further clarification, because they have a bunch of documents also from whistleblowers, and they want to start asking MTN to provide them in terms of the legal process. So that will start to unearth more documents about what is going on there. And then the third case has to do with a grand jury. Now, a grand jury comes from an American prosecutorial process. And what happens in a grand jury is that it's actually convened by state prosecutors to look into certain kinds of issues. And basically, it's the sort of start of a process by which the United States sort of attorneys will start to look into certain kinds of issues for legal purposes. And this is something that's now being undertaken as well by United States prosecutors. And what this shows is that American government officials are now getting a little bit upset with what is going on. And they are actually, they were actually going and to start looking at what's happening. So whereas the other ones, the one is effectively a Turkish entity, the other one are individuals inside America, and now we're having the actual American government. So, that is a question. By the way, if you want to be part of this conversation, you most certainly can be. We're happy to have any questions and or comments that you might like to have, and we will certainly take them. You can get us on 061-895-1019. That is your WhatsApp line, 061-895-1019. And you can send us a message, which is something that Anton has done. And he said, when did the ANC start supporting Iran? Was it after SA stopped the nuclear program? So that's a very good question, Anton. And with the permission of the listeners, I will actually take you on a quick detour to answer your question, to actually find out what it is that they did. So basically, Iran, up until the late 1970s, was actually a big supporter of the apartheid government, because it was under the Shah, and the South African government got a lot of its oil from Iran because Arab countries weren't supplying it oil, so they needed to get oil from somewhere, and so it came from Iran. Then in 1979, you have the Iranian Revolution, the Ayatollahs take over, and what happens in what happens is that the Ayatollah is ideologically opposed to everything Western, and South Africa at the time, apartheid government, is very close to America and the UK, and so he says, well, we're going to support the ANC with money and with support, and we are going to actually support the struggle. However, he has a problem, and that problem is that the Iraqis invaded Iran just at the same time, and that was via Saddam Hussein, and now Iran needed weapons. And the one place they could get weapons from was South Africa, whereas they, because of their conduct during the revolution, there were no weapons to be had. They took hostages from America, etc. So there were certainly no American-made weapons that they could get, but they could get South African weapons. And so they did a massive, more than once, $1 billion deal between Iran and South Africa to swap. Basically, they didn't actually do it in money terms. They basically swapped oil for guns. And so that, on the one hand, they're doing this background deal with the Nats. But on the other hand, they're screaming and shouting on how much they love the ANC, and they're giving the ANC money. And so when 94 rolls around, basically what you have is that the ANC is very grateful to Iran, because they say that they helped them. and they're immediately able to establish ties with South Africa from sort of 95 onwards. And there's quite a lot of stuff around agriculture and manufacturing and all sorts of other stuff that they start to do. But you do really see that after 2012, relations start to kick up. 2012 being when the MTN deal goes through. And then suddenly you start to have a lot more engagement between the Iranians and the South Africans. And like we've seen now recently, this general go, and we've had the president go there and the foreign minister. And so MTN does seem to have been a kind of a fulcrum point that has pushed the relationship further. And of course, the other thing that you start to see is that Hamas, Iran proxies like Hamas start to be seen to be more prominent in the South African milieu and connected to the South African government. So, for example, you may be aware that previously the ANC had a good relationship with the PLO, PLO being the Palestine Liberation Organization, and they were connected to the ANC, and they were kind of secular nationalists, very anti-Israel, many of them terrorists. But that was the connection. And in fact, to this day, basically, South African taxpayers pay for PLO officials to have an embassy here in South Africa. But as the relationship with Iran starts to move, then you know Hamas starts to become more and more prominent, and also the ANC and the South African government gets involved in internal Palestinian politics to try and bring the Hamas and the PLO together in different places. So that is sort of what happens, and that is where the Iranian thing comes from. And where some of this is important is that there's two key figures that we know about from this period. The one is that in 2012, the chairman of MTN was someone who you may have heard of called Cyril Ramaphosa, who's now, of course, the president. He was the chairman of MTN at the time. And he has been named in some of these cases as being linked to the allegation that the allegation that MTN may have got this deal corruptly. And then, of course, the other one is Nkabusi Jonas, who's the current chair of MTN, and he's supposed to be this envoy that is going to the United States, and he has been sort of not gotten anywhere, and the suggestion is because he is very connected there as well. So this is a real crisis, a real challenge, and you're seeing a pushback now. Sunday Times had a whole page on this, the front page on this question. And as South Africa does more and more on stuff which is Iranian related, we saw this general who met with like special forces up there in Iran, was very concerning, and a range of other issues that we're seeing with Iran, whether it's sort of South African observation of war games where Iran is part of, allowing them access to our ports. There was discussions about the Iranians wanting to buy the city hall of Tshwane the other day. So there's all of this stuff. And as South Africa is trying to figure out what to do about America, this Iranian question is getting more and more hot. And it's kind of weird because basically South Africa and Iran have very little in common, right? If you look at the economics, Iran doesn't make our top 20, even top 30 largest trading partner. Basically, they are not anywhere in our trading. In fact, we do more trade with Israel than we do with Iran. Obviously, our values don't align in that, you know, in Iran, certain religious and cultural minorities are not allowed to go to university. They get attacked. There's all of this suppression of religion, etc. There's no freedom of worship, no freedom of speech, no freedom of association, and which of course is not in South Africa. And then there's no real geopolitical reason to be engaging with Iran. We used to get the oil, as I said, in the 70s, but we get oil from all over the place. And you know, Iran is not in our region, so there's no real reason why we should be dealing with Iran, and yet we spend enormous amounts of political capital. Enormous amounts of political capital on this relationship, and the more it carries on, the more it's going to cost us. And I think that should any of these things actually go ahead with regards to MTN, any of these legal cases really start to put things out there, then we will start to see a response from South Africans who should be revolted at what is going on. So that is the MTN Iran deal, and this is, we'll be keeping very much a close eye on it to really understand what is going on. And that is what is happening here in regards to this particular issue. So we're going to have to watch it very, very closely. That is the question. Now let's go a little bit more local now and look at some polling numbers that are happening here in South Africa. You'll be aware, or you might not be aware, that we have an election coming up, a local government election coming up in the next, it's not clear exactly, but it'll probably be end of 26, beginning of 27. Now, that might sound like a long time away, but in electoral terms, it's basically 18 months and not very much at all. And so what you're starting to do is finding polling numbers coming through that would indicate where things are going, and you'll find different polls from different perspectives, and basically different groups are trying very hard to figure out what is going on, because they want to actually target people in for their votes, right? So that's what's going on here, and so we would need to we would need to find out what is happening around that, and see what the different polls are. So who was the first poll that's come out around this is actually a DA poll, and we will cover some other polls sort of going forward. But essentially, the DA polls have found that there is a that the ANC has gone below 30% in the upcoming local government elections, and actually in some places would be sort of smaller than some of the other parties, including the ANC, in terms of this particular question. So that is a really interesting that is a real interesting question. Now, a lot of people might say, well, it's a telephonic poll and it's not representative and it's based on 100% turnout. And yes. Like, all of these things are important to question. But what you need to do with polls is generally look at the trend. So, for example, a couple of months ago, the IRR did a poll which also showed that the DA was above the ANC. Now, the DA poll kind of shows a 40% potential for them to get votes in Johannesburg, so that would go up. That's particularly if Helen Zillard actually decides to run as mayor, which is kind of interesting. The other big one would be that they would have 48% in Tshwane. So if these polls were to be relieved and they actually happen, and bear in mind that like the ANC tends to do better closer to elections, like this tends to be a kind of a baseline, then that would mean that potentially you could have a situation where both Johannesburg and Pretoria, as well as a number of other metros, potentially Bloemfontein, maybe Nelson Mandela Bay, would all pass into opposition hands in a way that there would be no unstable coalitions. I mean, effectively, Tshwane had a stable coalition there for a while, but then because of some issues with Action SA, that's sort of dissolved. But if the DA and sort of the smaller opposition parties, normally like the ACDP and the FF Plus and some of these others, actually get involved, then it can actually be the case that the urban areas would effectively pass from ANC control and never come back. and that would be it, right? The ANC would disappear from the urban scene, like we've seen in the Western Cape, where they sort of disappeared out the city and then evaporated. It basically, the ANC runs at a sort of 20% party now in the Cape, and really doesn't do very much anywhere. And that's it. It's done. It's over. And that would be the run-up. First of all, it would have impact on the GNU, because people who are in the ANC inside the GNU would start to say, well, what are we doing in here? Should we rethink about this? It would be an electoral collapse ahead of the ANC's policy conference in 2027, where a new president would have to take over. There is the possibility of what it means for 2029, the actual next national election, because effectively what often happens is that through the tendering process, there's like a way, basically, effectively, of using public funds for the ANC's electoral things, so the electoral processes. So this would cut off a lot of that from their ability to do that. Joburg is a wealthy city. And if people start to see that Joburg is delivering, then, you know, they may move somewhere else. So that is a big deal. It would also be a question of, you know, where the DA has actually run outright majorities in places like KZN. There's some municipalities where they've been run. Mayor Chris Pappas has been very focused on that sort of thing. All it is that the ANC might lose there as well, and actually maybe there's some other places around KZN where you start to get a carve out as well. So it's just one poll, but it is one poll that's showing a trend, and you're going to have to look out for this, because in the next 18 months we're going to be seeing more and more polling. Is the ANC crashing out of local government? Well, actually, that's going to be up to you, because that's about whether you vote or not in 18 months' time. I'm Menji Shulman, and this is 101.9 High FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 High FM. And let us pop up into the African neighborhood and into the Middle East at the same time, and find out about some news that happened in the last week, because the Israeli foreign minister, Gideon Sa'ar, opened a new embassy in Zambia. And this is the first time in 53 years that there will be an Israeli embassy in Zambia. And you might know about this question because, or maybe you don't, but basically in the 50s and the 60s, Israel had what was known as a sort of Africa policy, and it used to go out into Africa and establish relations with African countries that were starting to become independent from the European colonial powers. And as they did so, there were a lot of swapping of these sorts of embassies. Israel had relations with 32 African countries in the 50s and the 60s, and a number of them had embassies in Israel, including 10 of which who had embassies in Jerusalem, which was kind of fascinating. That was very interesting. But then a lot of those ties came under pressure. You had Arab states who were also part of the OAU, the Organization of African Unity, and they sort of pushed to try and make sure that Israel was kicked out of African spaces. Initially, that didn't really go anywhere, and African states were quite happy to actually engage with Israel. But what happened was then, after a series of wars, including the Yom Kippur War, there basically the Arab countries sort of got involved to an extent that they said that any country that has relations with Israel, they won't be getting any oil from any Arab states. And that was sort of too much for these African states. And so basically Israel's representation in Africa went from something almost overnight, went from like 32 countries to like four almost overnight. And those four were like Malawi, I think it was like Mauritius, Lesotho, it was tiny. And that basically created a huge problem. And from there, there was a huge issue in terms of its Africa policy that sort of disappeared more or less from the scheme, from the world. And it is a super big issue for America, Israeli policy to this day. But pretty much after the end of the Cold War and after the end of apartheid, Israel and Africa ties sort of grew again. And actually now they have more than 32 relations with African states, although not that many embassies, and not that, of course, too many embassies in Jerusalem. I believe that Malawi has promised to have an embassy in Jerusalem, although that doesn't seem to have been the case so far. So nonetheless, that is where we're at. And so in this context, especially in the context of what's going on at the moment with European countries being so opposed to Israel and some stuff in the Gulf and Western opinion being so poor, that Israel has decided to move into Africa once again, important for economic reasons, important for political reasons. There are many African countries at the UN, and so they have a majority, and they've picked Zambia as one of their choices. Now, Zambia is an interesting country, right? Southern Africa, so probably the most friendly country in Southern Africa to Israel. Actually, pretty much the SADC countries are almost universally hostile, with the exception maybe of Swaziland, a little bit Lesotho, sometimes Botswana, but really the friendliest country is Zambia. There used to be a Jewish population there, but the Jews moved in the 60s when the Zambian government at the time said that only Zambians were allowed to work if you were a native-born Zambian. So the Jewish community left, and there's only about 11 Jews left, although there is a museum for the Jewish community that was left there. However, there was a presidential election recently. The president's nickname is HH, He's just kind of widely seen as a democratic president, as a more free market orientation, and he has been trying to get together the various kind of Western groups, because of course Zambia had taken off some very bad Chinese loans, and they're trying to renegotiate and get the economy going, get everything open and going. And so he has been working with different groups, and that includes the Israelis. And so opening up an embassy is a sign of also wanting to get not just support from Israel, but also additional support from America. And I think that is what's driving this in Iran. And also that public diplomacy, public attitudes towards Israel are much better at the ground level in Africa than they are in the rest of the world. So I think I may have mentioned this before previously, but a poll was done with Pew, a very reputable international polling group, who said that of the 24 countries that they interviewed, basically of the top five pro-Israel countries in the world, three of them were in Africa, including South Africa. Obviously, South Africa a bit more hostile because of our political situation, but effectively, Kenya, wildly pro, Nigeria, wildly pro, and you could probably extrapolate between Kenya and South Africa that you get something in Zambia. So this is a move that's popular with the populace. It's popular with the government because of the leadership that's there at the moment. And so it's important for the Israelis because they need to look for new allies as things get hot with the Democratic Party and in America and Canada and Australia and England and France and even the Netherlands, who have been fairly oppositional so far. So that's what's behind this move in Zambia. Interesting to see if any other countries start joining and what else might happen. But that is my take on what is happening between Israel and Zambia. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. Welcome back to the show. And Isabella has messaged in asking a question about our previous discussion about Iran. Yeah, this Iran discussion has gotten quite a lot of attention, and maybe we must do some more on this, get some Iran experts or whatever in to actually discuss more, because I think, as I said, it is going to be bigger and more, as a problem as we go forward. So we might need to talk more about it. But in the meantime, Isabella has come and has come in and is actually asking a question in this regard. And it is, if Iran is so involved with SA, how would that affect our next election? Well, that is a question that we'll have to look at. This basically, I would say, two options. The one is, would it result in an electoral change? That is a question. Maybe. I mean, generally speaking, South Africans don't vote on foreign policy. We didn't see them vote even on Israel in the last election. So it probably wouldn't have that sort of election impact. But I think the big risk always with the ANC is that if they felt like they were under pressure, would they try and steal the election? That's the question. Now, I don't know. The ANC has tried in the past to steal smaller elections, like in Potchefstroom, but in general, they've actually held the line and have not been such a problem. So I think that Iran or not Iran, we're going to have to keep an eye on the question of the ANC chapping elections going forward and make sure that those institutions are independent, that run our elections, and are supported against interference. Now, in the last 2 minutes before we end the show, only the Israelis could make a comedy about kidnapping and make one that would sell a million tickets. So a new film called Saving Shuli San was set for a June release, but with the war in Iran, they actually postponed it. But now it has been released, and it has sold a million tickets in the country. And basically, it's a new Israeli comedy about a man who gets kidnapped by gangs in Japan. And it's made in between Israel and Japan. And it has been creating serious waves. It's all about a sequel to a movie called Saving Shuli, which also sold a lot of tickets and came out during COVID. And basically, in both films, Shuli, who's played by someone called David Shaw, gets kidnapped. And in the first one, he was taken to Colombia. And now he gets kidnapped by a group in Japan. And then he's basically has to cook for them in order to survive. And of course, it's supposed to be very funny, but at the same time, with what's going on with October the 7th, it's quite a kind of hot button thing to do in Israel at the moment. And basically, it's a kind of slapstick comedy. They do stupid things. It's like a sort of Israeli version of the Zohar. I can't remember. It was Ben Stiller. Don't mess with the Zohan. But this one. And it's also there is a kind of female foil played by Emma Medding, who is the daughter of a Japanese mother and Australian father who grew up in Israel, and it's supposed to be very, very funny, and also run by some of the guys who do Saturday Night Live. So there we go. The Israelis are still managing to laugh at themselves and not just laugh about some really dark stuff. So if you're into slapstick comedy, Israeli style, then Saving Shuli San is out now, apparently in Israeli theaters, but who knows? Maybe they come out some other time as well. That brings us to the end of the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to everyone who helps put the show together. Craig, who pushes all the big red buttons, Woozy is on the sound, and to you, dear listener, who joins us every single week. Do join us again next week on the New Blue Review.